is Randy G. from La Mesa.
My name is Randy. I'm an alcoholic. Boy, do I feel special tonight. We had a last-minute cancellation of our 10-minute speaker, and I got a text message when I was at work from Brian, and I said, no problem, I can do it. I haven't spoke at this podium as a speaker at this meeting in probably about, I bet it's been about 9 years. So anyway, kind of fun. I'm warming up my sponsor tonight. He's got a little time, and you'll get to hear Bill next. But I stand here tonight before you trying to cram 30 years of recovery into 10 minutes. That's always fun. My sobriety date is February 6th of 1989. This is my... the way the calendar works, I think it's my 30th Christmas, clean and sober, which is pretty darn cool. And, you know, in a nutshell, I'm here again tonight, clean and sober by the grace of a loving God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Something I didn't have when I got here, I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous when I got to AA. I knew nothing about it. I saw that old black and white movie. I think it was Lee Remick and who was in that? Jack Lemmon. When I was a kid, what was the name of the movie? I'm trying to. Days of Wine and Roses. I was probably about 9 years old. I'd already had my first alcoholic experience, but I remembered that movie, and then there was one called The Lost Weekend, and I knew one man in AA when I was in high school. He was a stepdad to my girlfriend in high school, and he said he was in AA, but I saw him drinking all the time, so, That was a memory. When I got sober, I was working at a car dealership, and the GM there at the time, I was told he was in AA. And he had brought a couple of guys onto the floor to sell there, and there were two of these other guys that were in AA. Now, again, I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, but I knew enough to know that if you're a member of AA, that you don't drink, or at least that's the concept. So I stayed as far away from those guys as I possibly could because I was the drinker for many, many years. When I got up in the morning or came to around 5 or 5:30, the first thing I would do is I would get something off my nightstand to make me open my eyes. And then I would take a couple of pulls out of the vodka out of the side-by-side, and I usually started drinking about 5:30 in the morning. And I like to smoke weed, and I like dry goods a lot. And so by the time I would get to work at about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was a department manager at this car dealership where Ron and I worked at, I was higher than a kite at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'd go through the motions. I'd make a pot of coffee in the office, and you know, by the time the coffee was done, about 8 or 8:30 in the morning, I would pull the vodka out of my drawer, and I always kept some V8, and because you got to get out of the rut by about 8:30, 9 o'clock, you know, it's time to get going again. And then I would go to lunch, and I would usually go to a bar, and I would drink for about an hour, hour and a half. Knocked back about 5 or 6 beers and a couple shots of vodka before I left, and then I would go back to work. And then about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, one of the metal techs that worked in my department, he and I would split a 12-pack and a pint. And that was a typical day at work. And I always say I had to work twice as hard to look half as good. I wonder what it would have been like if I'd have been sober. But, you know, I started drinking when I was about 13, getting into my father's alcohol. And then when I was 15, I discovered other things like accelerants that allowed me to stay up and drink longer on the weekends and during the week. But I was smoking weed every day by the time I was 15, and by the time I was 18 and in my first year of college, I was full-blown. And, I mean, I was a daily drinker. And, you know, we talk about, when Trish read more about alcoholism, I'm one of those alcoholics that never really thought about not drinking or drinking like other people drink, because why would I want to do that? I drank the way I wanted to drink. And I didn't know I was an alcoholic when I got here. I'd wrecked cars, I'd had DUIs, and I just thought it was, you know, bad luck and bad timing. And, you know, I endangered everyone around me. I was a vehicular manslaughter charge waiting to happen. I got here when I was 32, about, you know, 3 months shy of my 33rd birthday. And the man that came and 12-stepped me the morning I got out of jail after I wrecked the last company car was that GM. Ron came to my house. I called my boss. I'd just gotten out of jail. The owner of the store said, "Why don't you call Ron?" And I knew one woman. It was a friend of my wife's, and she was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they came over, and they asked me all kinds of funny questions about how I drank and where I drank. They were just, I thought, really stupid questions. Now, later when I took the 20 questions, I checked 19 of them. And then I got down to the bottom, and I read, if you've checked three or more, you're probably an alcoholic. I was very pissed off, and you know, because I didn't want to be an alcoholic, you know, and I didn't know what I thought. I was in this behavioral health hospital, which is just a polite way of saying you're in the nut ward. But I was in the elite nut ward. I was in the chemical dependency unit, you know. So I was in there for 30 days, and that 30 days absolutely saved my life. And while I was in there, I opened up the big book and the 12 and 12. You know, they got them shrink-wrapped on your nightstand. And I started reading those books every night. It took me about 6 days to come to and out of the ether and off the whatever they put you on, Librium or whatever, you know, for those first several days, Valium and Librium to kind of get you to detox. But I started reading those books, and you know, I got to tell you, I feel very grateful that when I got here rendered, surrendered. I got a friend, his name is Gail, and he likes to say, when I got here done, well done, crispy. And I was crispy. I was bankrupt in all accounts, you know, spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally. I was an absolute train wreck. And again, I didn't know how sick I was until I'd been here a while, you know, and it took a while. I stayed in that hospital for 30 days. I needed to be in a inpatient program. I'm firmly convinced that if I had done the outpatient boogie, I wouldn't be standing here right now. Good chance of that. But, you know, I got honest. For the first time in my life, I got honest. And I believe in the how it works is the honesty, the open-mindedness, and the willingness that I didn't know jack shit about what sobriety meant, what an alcoholic was, and what it was going to take to stay sober. But thank God I had a good foundation. I had two meetings that were the bedrock and the foundation of my recovery. I got sober at the old API over in La Mesa, which was about 6 blocks from where I'd lived. I drove by it all the time, didn't even know it was there. And there were two meetings. There was a Sunday morning meeting called Battery Chargers. That's still my home group 30 years later. That's still my home group. Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, we meet at the Salvation Army over on University Avenue. It's a great meeting. If you've never been, check it out. And then the Old East Side group on Monday nights. And then from there, I went to lots of other meetings, and I was all over the place. I used to drive up to the Freedom Ranch on Wednesday nights to go up with the guys and hang out. I did that for the first few years, you know, and I just went to lots of meetings because I didn't have anywhere else to go. It was the only, the El Cajon Alano Club, because I worked in El Cajon. And let me tell you, the El Cajon Alano Club and the Lemon Grove Alano Club were very scary places for me when I first came in here. Kind of like the Boiled Owl down on University, you know. I popped in there a few times, holy cow. you know, but took me a long time to get a sponsor, my first sponsor. I didn't get one for about 4 years because, you know, I was sponsoring myself. And when people would say, who's your sponsor? And I'd say, well, I'm kind of, you know, doing it on my own. And they'd say, well, you know, you got a dumbass for a sponsor then. And so finally I asked a guy for help, you know, and that's when I first did the steps. And, you know, what really saved my bacon initially in the beginning were the first three, and especially step three. You know, I was raised Black Belt Missouri Synod Lutheran. I grew up in the church, and the minute I started altering my consciousness with drugs and alcohol, I had no God in my life whatsoever. And so I found a God of my understanding in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that step four that scared the living bejesus out of me, you know, it took a while, but we got it done. Fifth step, no big deal, six and seven. Eight, you already got that when you do your fourth step. You got the list, you know. It was long. I had some brutal amends to make. I did them. And then 10, 11, and 12, which I still do today pretty much on a daily basis. And I got to tell you, my whole life today is centered in Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I absolutely love service work. I do a lot of service work. I try to help take a man through the steps when I can. And everything I've been given, like it says in those nine-step promises, have come true. I have peace of mind. I have serenity. I have hope. I have faith. I have trust that God's got my back, and so do you. And those were things that I didn't have when I got here. So I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a do-over, a second chance, and I'm really grateful to be here, and thank you for listening.